What's up, everyone? It's Andrea. Today, we go really deep into the terrors of radioactivity. Garvin is way too trusting, and we ask the question, how many mobs has Goron been a part of? All that and more coming up.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Charisse, this week we're breaking down Season 7, Episode 16, Thine Own Self. This episode is written by Christopher Hatton and Ronald D. Moore and directed by Weinrich Kolb. Data inexplicably loses his memory while on a mission and wanders into a pre-industrial village carrying dangerous radioactive materials he was sent to retrieve. Meanwhile, Troy takes the test necessary for the promotion from lieutenant commander to commander, but struggles with the hard calls a leader must sometimes make. So, I mean, it kind of is like the Troy part. I was actually surprised. This is like my initial thoughts. I'm pretty shocked that this episode is as late in the series as it is.
Yes.
Like, I remembered it.
I didn't remember when it happened. I thought it happened. Honestly, I didn't even think it happened in season seven. I thought it happened at the end of beginning of season six.
Well, like, when was the chain of command? Was that season six?
Might have been season five. I don't know.
Okay, well, whatever.
Gotta go dig through the archives.
Yeah, like, I'm not off the top of my head do I know that one. But, you know, like, after that asshole captain, like, Jellicoe takes command and he makes Deanna, like, wear the regulation uniform, I thought it was only, like, a few episodes after that that she went for this, like, qualification test. And I never watched the episodes this late in, like, the last season. So I was like, but I remember this one. Like, how is it this late? So I was kind of shocked.
Which is so interesting, right? Because it's very much a B plot. And it's a very small B plot, too. It's not like half the episode. It's very small, but it's extremely significant because I also remember, like, oh, my gosh, Troy's going to be, like, in command. I don't know. I remember it being, like, a really big moment of growth for a character for it to be kind of sandwiched in this episode. I was surprised. I was like, oh, that's where this happens.
Totally. Okay. There is an episode entitled The First Duty, and I thought that that episode was where this subplot came in, where it was like, my first duty is to the ship. So I was like, oh, it's part of a first duty. And then we reviewed the first duty and I was like, wait, there isn't anything in here about Troy's test-taking ability. Like, So I'm kind of psyched that we're doing this one. Now, this episode was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Art Direction for a series. So the art direction kicked ass, apparently, but I don't really know what art direction means.
I was just about to ask you. I was like, what's that again?
Because it's completely significant, but I do not know what it means at all. I'm sorry.
Because when you say like picture or like direction or like acting, I'm like, okay. Or,
you know,
but then art direction.
Makeup or something.
Right. I'm like, does that mean art? I feel like it doesn't. It means something else. I don't know.
But I feel like.
Congrats.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to make a completely uneducated guess. And I'm sure I'm going to get an email from someone that's like, that's wrong. Which if that's the case, please do send that email. Cause I do want to know.
But info@thetngpodcast.com.
Thank you. We're late in our season. So I'm like, everybody knows the email, but no, they don't. I always thought like art direction was just kind of like the overarching sort of the entire direction. Yeah. The visuals. So it's like hair, makeup, sets, lighting, all of it sort of falls under art direction. And then the other aspect of producing is like the behind the scenes stuff where it's like getting the cast and crew together in the right place, arranging the filming shoots and schedules and all that. I don't know, but like, I'm totally making that up, but that was kind of my idea when I read that, but I could be, totally wrong.
Well, I can see that this episode was beautiful. The costumes were beautiful. The makeup was beautiful. The sets were beautiful. The set was a little too perfect for me.
Sterile.
Yeah, it was too sterile, too clean. Not enough like random bodies milling about. it felt to me like a set. Like looking at it. However, that being said, what a beautiful set.
Oh my God.
It was very well thought out. Like it felt like the set of a small village as opposed to where it usually feels like a small village.
Yes.
But also, to be fair, usually they just like go to the mountains, right? So they're like, and then like throw up a hut. So they don't really build anything special or alien. It's just like out here in Hollywood in the mountains. So they really did make a world in this episode. And it was very beautiful.
They did a really beautiful job. I thought the same thing too. It was a little bit like department store Christmas trees. Where they're like a little too perfect.
They're too perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, can we have like an ornament askew or something?
Yeah, something.
Feel like a person did this?
One Christmas, I was like, I'm going to make the most perfect tree ever because, you know, I love to do that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it did look like a department store tree. And my husband and I, when I was married, we were like, it's too sterile or something. So we had to throw up some of that like crappy macaroni art from when we were kids, mm-hmm. you know, the little ornaments. And we were like, okay, that feels more like a family tree, not this like,
yeah. perfect.
This city, this whole village to me felt like a UNESCO World Heritage Site where I was like, it was spotless. And it's a place mm-hmm. I would love to visit for a day. Mm-hmm. But to live there, I'm like, can we get like
but a- But you know like, nobody lives there.
One piece of litter on the floor. Like yeah. not even one piece. Yeah.
Anyway. Or like a scuffed wall or-
Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Some hay. Some of that hay from the episodes a while back. We had a handful left.
Damn, that hay. We'll never be rid of it. Okay. What were your initial thoughts?
You know, I did not remember this one at all. Other than Data loses his memory in a village. And then I kind of thought, I remembered like maybe he like rediscovers that he's an android, which he doesn't really. But that's what mm-hmm. I thought happened in this episode. So I was like, I don't know. I guess he just like discovers he's different from everybody. And it's kind of like, you know, he's back on Omicron Theta all over again. Like, oh, I'm different and I'm not a human or I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I had no recollection of this episode other than that. So this was like exciting. I was like, ooh, bonus episode, especially
a new one
late in the season. I feel like a lot are going to feel that way because I usually don't rewatch season 7. Ooh, so
that's a good thought. Yeah. Like I didn't even think of that. Yeah. They're all going to be bonuses right as we get to the end. And then we're going to have the most unbonus episode when we do the series finale. And I'm just going to cry my eyes out. So get ready for that one, but let's break into this episode. So this is a nice little refreshing change. Beverly's in the captain's chair as the episode opens, and she's doing a like bridge officer's log.
Mm-hmm.
And in this log, we learn that Deanna has been away at a reunion for her Starfleet class and that Data is away on assignment. And a Federation deep space probe went off course and crashed on Barkon 4, another cool planet name.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the material in the probe is radioactive, and he was sent to retrieve it before it can contaminate this biosphere of this like pre-warp civilization. It's like pre-industrial. It's like way yeah. back there.
It's like medieval times.
It so totally is medieval times.
My thinking, though, just as you're talking about this, is so they sent Data to this pre-industrial super duper pre-warp society,
mm-hmm.
Prime Directive, Schmime Directive. But when we had that planet with Worf's brother, where the planet was about to freaking die, mm-hmm. they were like, no, 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 Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. We cannot interfere. We cannot interfere because they are pre-warp. So we must sadly watch them all die. But here it's like, I mean, just throw Data down there and pick those up. I mean, as long as he stays in the bushes and no one sees him, I think it's good.
I cannot stress enough how correct you are. Okay. Like, it is ridiculous, which also you can beam shit up from the surface. Mm-hmm. You do it all the time. Can't you mm-hmm. just beam the probe up? But again, you wouldn't have a
surely,
story.
Surely like, you could scan for radioactive metal that does not exist naturally in their pre-industrial society.
Thank you. Good old non-naturally occurring radioactive materials. Beam that yep. sucker into mm-hmm. space like, and put some buoys around it. Call it a day.
I mean, they could beam it into anything. They could beam it into a containment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, into the little briefcase they had that kept it all safe.
It was
they
a could cool just, briefcase. Boop,
boop. Yeah. It was super cool. It was so Trek. It was so cool.
It was very Trek.
But yeah, so just as you were talking, I was like, wait a minute. It doesn't make, I mean, even when I was watching the episode, I was like, they sent Data by himself. I get that it's radioactive, but I don't understand an away mission of one. I don't understand why they sent him mm-hmm. to a pre-warp society. Yeah, like,
check.
They didn't do, I mean, they didn't send a human that they like altered to look like the
Thank
species.
You.
Thank no, you. They sent Data who looks nothing like it. Come on, guys. Come on, yeah. guys.
This is some late series shit where they're like, you know what? We don't even give a fuck. Just throw it all in there. Whatever.
Is cares? There any reason why they couldn't? I don't know. I was going to say, is there any reason why they couldn't have been a warp society so that way this made more sense? But of course, because the whole thing was about ancient D times, which yeah. was actually very fun to
gave
watch.
Gave me a lot of Robin Hood, you know, Captain Picard and, you know, yeah. Cupid kind of vibes where it's yeah. like, you know, they've got to save Vash or whatever. Like it felt very mm-hmm. much in those types. I am astounded, by the way, as we're doing this podcast through the whole series, how many costumes for Star Trek, the Next Generation set in the year 23, whatever, have like medieval costumes. Like how many mm-hmm. episodes kind of have that sort of time period, either like mm-hmm. in a holodeck with Barclay, or like a couple of those pre, you know, like Who Watches the Watchers with the pre, mm-hmm. like the proto Vulcans that also mm-hmm. are dressed like it's the Renaissance for some reason. Like there's a because lot. Because the
outfits are so cool.
They are so cool. And they're so different to one, anything we see today, and two, anything you would see in the year 2300. So it's mm-hmm. the stark contrast, but it kind of blows my mind that like the costume department must have an entire closet of like Renaissance
clothes. Of Ren Fair wear. Yeah. Totally. And I'm here for it because I would rather see them go to medieval times any and every day of the week than see them one more time go back to like the 90s, the 80s, or the 2000s. Let's go a little further back.
Anyway, all right. So Deanna is talking to Beverly and she was like, you know, I had this reunion and she seems like slightly down about it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's interesting to see the different paths that everyone has taken. I'm going to have to take her word for it because I have avoided my high school reunions like the fucking plague. I'm like, I don't want to see you people. I didn't keep in touch with you for 25 years. Why would I want to see you now? I don't care. You don't even know who I am. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
That's the spirit. I went to my 10-year reunion and it was really cool. It was really cool to see people. Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, I had a pretty small graduating class. We had just like a couple hundred people. I think our whole graduating class was like 300 people or something like that. But I had my little group of like super nerds that we were all in the same classes together, you know, our little like AP group or whatever.
Yeah.
It was only like 20 of us and we were in every single class together.
Oh,
in
that's
all
cute.
Of high school. So probably like, I don't know, 5 or 10 of them came to the reunion and then like 10 or 20 other people. It was very small, but I recognized every single face and it was really
that's
cool
really
to be
cool.
like, oh my gosh, so-and-so's a nurse now, and so-and-so owns a company, and so-and-so, like, these two got married, and, like, this girl has 6 kids now. Like, just all the things, it was really cool, and it was really chill, and there was nothing like it is on TV. You know, there was no drama, it wasn't Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion, it wasn't anything like that.
Where everybody reverts to high school rules, and everybody's like, there's a mean girl and a jock, and, like,
and they're, like, hooking up under the bleachers.
Yeah,
there was so none of that. There was none of that. But it was actually really fun. So I'm grateful that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
See, I had an okay time in high school, but I was like pretty unpopular the first couple of years because I was just like, I didn't hit like a growth spurt until I was a little later. So I was like an easy target. And my graduating class was like almost 1,000 kids. It was a huge class. So like,
yeah.
The cliques were so different. You could be in the same class with someone for 4 years and not even really realize that they're there because they ran in such different circles.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, and also like by the time I was like a sophomore and junior, I was friends with seniors who by the time they graduated, I was I don't really know anybody here anymore. Right. So like, I couldn't wait to get out of high school. I have no interest in like returning just to be like, hey, I don't remember you at all, but you have a company now. That's cool. That's cool. That's cool. Like, I feel like I'm good. Anyway, but Deanna's feeling, she seems a little bit like wistful or down. And she's like, hold on, Beverly, why are you on Bridge Watch? Like, you don't need the rank or the role or the responsibilities like to be chief medical officer. And Beverly's like, well, I volunteered for Bridge Watch because one, I like to stay on top of things. And two, I felt like taking the commander's test that I didn't have to take because, you know, about 8 years ago, I just kind of felt like I needed to stretch myself a little bit and do it just to see if I could, which I completely get that feeling where it's like, let me just do it to see if I could. And the whole time, poor Deanna is looking like so disappointed in herself. And I think that's pretty common after like touchstone moments like class reunions where people can kind of compare themselves to other people's lives and see like the different paths you could have taken. I don't know. I just felt bad for her. I was like, oh girl, you don't seem like yourself at all.
Yeah. She did seem like she was looking at Beverly in some kind of way when she was like, yeah, you know, I want to be in command. I want to push myself and all that. And Troy's like, And that's when I was like, oh, it's this episode. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is the one. This is it, guys. This is it.
Identified it. Well, we do learn that like Data's not responding to hails from the Enterprise and Beverly's like, okay, ask the con to continue to send him updates on the schedule. And Deanna's like, huh? You know, and Bev's like, well, we've been routed to the Lexington to take on some medical supplies and deliver them to the Tarenko colony. So we're going to be like away for a couple of days, which again, Prime Directive, we're just leaving Data alone in the bushes for a number of days. I guess if anybody could deal with that and not get bored, it's Data. But also that's like, beam him down, collect the shit, and beam him. It was like a 15-minute away mission.
Or really, like, why? I mean, so let me get this straight. So the Enterprise just flew over this planet, dropped Data off like a passenger on the side of the highway and then flew away.
Yeah.
It's like not nearby. It's not. Yeah. I don't really understand what's going on here, but that's what they're going to do. And she's like, yeah, we can't tell Data, but it's fine because the probe was going to interfere with communications. He'll be good. Like, he'll just stay in the bushes for a couple more days. It'll be good.
For as futuristic as everything is, it is astounding how hard it is to beam or transport
or
communicate through like just like the like a cloud passes through the atmosphere and they're like, oh, communications are down for the next 6 hours. Really? Come on. Come on, guys. But whatever. So cut to the surface of this planet that looks like it's in the midst of its like Renaissance period based on this like gorgeous like 15th century looking kind of clothing. The town is super spotless. You know, it's like a World Heritage Site. The clothing and the alien makeup, by the way, beautifully done. They're like humanoids. The Barconians just have kind of, they look like all of them have been like struck by lightning just on their forehead. It's like black lightning.
It's like a really cool, it's like a much cooler Harry Potter look. Like instead of just the one bolt, it's like pew, 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 pew. It's
very cool. You know what I think it is? It reminds me of The Most Toys when that alien has got like what looks very clearly like some Sharpie markers thrown on the side of his eyes. This looked like a leveling up, like five levels above Kiva's Faja, where it's like, this is what that could have looked like.
Because that looks straight up like a Sharpie. But this looks like maybe more of a tattoo, but it could also be a birthmark. Like a
birthmark.
It looked really nice. Like, and you know, they painted it by hand, but whatever they painted it with, it looked like it belonged on skin.
It was beautiful. No, it's really cool. I mean, if I had to create that look just out of scratch, I'd probably cut that pattern out of paper and then lay that paper over somebody's forehead and like airbrush that pattern on, you know what I mean? So that way it like stays and you'd have everybody's labeled like, oh, this is Gia. So it's like, she looks the same in every scene. Cause you know, it takes like a week to film anyway. So this dad and his daughter are walking and talking when Data wanders in looking all kinds of fucked up and disheveled. And his uniform is like torn and his face is like burned and
his hair is all messy. We've never seen him look like
ever. This. And it cuts to credits right when he's like making the most like mechanically sounds and obviously can't speak. And it's like, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was a good bum, bum, bum.
That's a great time, right? To cut to credits.
Yes. So we go to this dad whose name is Garvin. We find out way later. And the daughter whose name is Gia. And Garvin is like,
cutest kid ever.
She's super cute. I'm surprised she's not like a super celebrity. Like when we had Kirsten Dunst, I was expecting that. I was like, who is this little girl?
And or
I was like,
oh, Ashley Judd. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, it's just a girl.
She's just a cute kid. Yeah.
So cute. Yeah. So anyways, he's like, Gia, go home right away. And he's like going to talk to the stranger. And as he's talking to Data, Data first can't speak and he's making this mechanical sound. But then when he can speak, he's
sounds
just repeating.
So cool.
It does sound really cool. He's just kind of repeating everything that Garvin says. But he's doing it, his voice is kind of echoing, and it's so creepy because they did the exact same thing with his voice when Brent Spiner was in Independence Day.
Yes!
And he
when
he
the
like
alien
this,
has him?
Yes. He was this, like, you know, kind of a jerkwad scientist or whatever, and the alien, like, grabs him and wraps his little tentacle around his throat and starts speaking through Brent Spiner's character, whose name I don't even remember, and he does the same voice, and it's so creepy. So when he was doing it here, I was like, like the aliens are going to kill everyone.
Yes.
But it wasn't that kind of episode. So his voice kind of clears and he's like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what's going on. And Garvin's like, your skin is so pale. Your eyes are weird. Like,
yeah,
this is like, something very unusual is going on. And Gia's like, yeah, he looks really cool, Dad.
Yeah, I thought I told you to go home. Which, number one, don't ever tell a kid to go home in danger. You know they're going to hide behind a fucking wagon wheel and watch the whole thing. You know they are.
Yeah. I mean,
what
to
other
be fair,
do you have? Like, I guess you couldn't say stay here, but like, but
he could have done literally anything. He could have put her behind him. He could have done something. But she walks 3 feet to his left and hides behind a barrel. You can't tell me he didn't see her right there.
Right,
and
then, behind a fucking wagon wheel. I was
and then he's like, all right, Gia, you need to go to school while I handle this. And she's like, okay, father. And she walks right past Data. I was like, what if he's dangerous? What if he's crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, don't have your kid walking past this disheveled man who has ripped clothes and stuff. Like, okay, so I lived in New York City for about 5 years. Speaking of crazy people. And there were a lot of people who were mentally unwell. And, you know, people who were just who just didn't like other people, you know, who were just antisocial and whatever. Why were they living in New York City?
Kind of aggressive. Yeah.
But the people who were mentally unstable and clearly off their meds were extremely, extremely unpredictable. Like you could just be sitting there, and I've seen things like you could just be sitting there and they'll just turn around and hit somebody in the face, or they'll just turn around and like smash somebody over the head with something. Oh, one time, God. I was walking down the street and a guy threw a glass bottle at my face, and it missed me by like, I could feel like the air going past
my
head.
Yeah.
Like it barely missed me, and he threw it at me for no reason. Like that's just because there's things going on in their mind we don't see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, they're reacting to environments that we're not aware of. So mm-hmm. to me, whenever I see someone who's like kind of mentally unstable, maybe they're talking to themselves or they're like really agitated or whatever, I always give them a wide berth because of so many experiences I had in New York City.
Yeah.
Of seeing them, you know, like attack someone or, you know, cut someone or just like scream. Like I've had somebody just scream at me, just start yelling and screaming when I walk into the subway just because I was there. You know, it's not personal, but that's the whole thing, is you cannot predict it. So in this scenario, that is exactly where my urban mind would go.
Yeah.
And there is no
right
way
past him.
There is no way on earth or on this planet that I would let my kid walk within like 100 feet of this person who could be unstable and dangerous.
We are in a town square. There's any other direction you could have gone. Go around.
Any other direction. Any other
go
direction.
To go to school. Don't go right past it. Yeah, no, I totally get that.
Thankfully, Data wasn't dangerous at all. But me watching this was like, oh, my gosh. Like, it was freaking me out on behalf
I
of
bet
this
it
girl
was.
For the situation.
I bet it was. Now, I got to say, I give such major applause to Brent Spiner for the entire course of the series. Nobody gets to flex their acting chops more mm-hmm. than Brent Spiner on this show.
Yeah.
Yes, Beverly goes crazy. Yes, Picard goes crazy when he and
Riker
like
goes
Sarah
crazy.
Riker goes crazy.
But there's that's a one lot episode.
Of, like, there's a lot of going crazy, but Brent Spiner gets to be Data. He gets to be Lore. He gets to be Noonien
Soong.
He gets mm-hmm. to be Grandpapa or whatever the fuck.
He gets like, to he gets be to, absolutely everybody in Fistful of Datas.
He gets to be. Thank you. Oh, God, that episode's so fun. So, like, what a phenomenal actor. And
Grandpapa.
He gets to be this, like, lost Tin Man.
Yeah.
Who just, like, wanders in and doesn't know where he is, who he is. I think it's very, very cool. Now, the man says, my name is Garvin. And Data's like, my name is Garvin. It's like, no, that's not right. He's just sort of parroting back. And you're right. He kind of like his voice kind of clicks into place finally. And he does say, I don't know who I am. And Garvin, God bless him and his kind eyes. That man was like, well, let me see if I can help you. You know, which I was mm-hmm. like, thank you, Garvin. He takes the case from Data because Data's still carrying the briefcase that says radioactive on it. And it's got like the hazmat symbols. Mm-hmm. So Garvin takes the case, hoping it might prove, you know, provide some clues as to Data's origins and whereabouts. And it says radioactive, which Data can read. And Garvin's like, well, that's interesting. Like, you can read these symbols. And then Charisse, he opens the case and picks up the radioactive material with his bare hands.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no. Like I was
Data can read radioactive, but he doesn't know what it means.
Yeah, they don't
remember
what
it means. So he's just like, And so the guy's like, oh, what's this? And he's like, I don't know what that is either. They're like, okay.
Piece of scrap metal looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Which, of course, they don't know that it was dangerous. And that's kind of the whole point of this story. But I was like, oh my God. And so now I'm going to provide, if you don't mind, a teachable moment about radioactivity. Okay. And I've talked about it before, but we're going to go in depth because there is radioactive is like a theme between in this episode and even in the subplot with like Deanna having to make some hard choices about Geordi's going into radioactive plasma or whatever. So here's why radioactivity is so freaking scary. You can't smell it. You can't feel it. You can't taste it. You can't hear it. The only thing you can taste, which is not the radioactivity, but the firefighters who like dealt with the initial fallout from the explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in 1986, is that they all tasted metal in their mouth. It's because the blood vessels in your mouth are starting to break apart.
Rupture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're starting to rupture. So you're tasting the metal that's in your own blood because our blood has a lot of iron in it. So cellular death is induced by ionizing radiation and includes both mitosis-linked death, which means your cells cannot reproduce and replicate like they normally do, or in extreme cases, apoptosis, which is the destruction of the cell. So you've got this like cell membrane that holds the cell together. And inside is this jelly called interstitial fluid. And when that membrane is like exposed to really strong ionizing radiation, it sort of just like creates all these holes. Like imagine you've got like a water balloon filled with like jello and you poke a bunch of holes in it and then you squeeze the balloon. Like it, like all that jelly blebs out. And so now imagine all of that happening to all of your cells at once. Okay. Like that's what intense radiation poisoning does. And none of the material in your body like can survive that. It's really intense and it's super scary. And what's even worse is that our bodies like absorb, everything absorbs radiation and then ends up like radiating it back out, which is why like the firefighters, like the poor, unfortunate firefighters who all died within like a couple of days of being at the Chernobyl plant trying to put out this fire, because they were exposed to like a wide open core, which is like hell on earth. Mm-hmm. They had to be buried in lead lined coffins because their bodies still were like so radioactive. It was really, really dangerous. Mm. And then this is like even the worst part is like the pain is supposed to be unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excruciating. But because all your cells are blasting apart, your blood vessels are blasting apart, there's no place that you can administer morphine. There's nothing you can do because mm-hmm. you need like an intact blood vessel to carry the morphine, but that's mm-hmm. all falling apart and ripping apart like an explosion as well. So it's like really scary. So I did a little more research on this and I was like, oh, there is a specific gland in your body that tends to absorb the most radiation, and it's your thyroid. So it regulates your body's metabolic rate, your growth and development. It plays a role in controlling your heart, your muscle and digestive function, your brain development and bone maintenance. It's like basically like the regulator for your whole body. Mm-hmm. And the thyroid gland can't tell the difference between stable and radioactive iodine. So it'll absorb both. Mm-hmm. So if you take potassium iodide tablets, like if you're exposed to extreme radiation, it can help a little bit by blocking that radioactive iodine from entering the thyroid. So when a person takes that stable iodine in the medicine gets absorbed by the thyroid. So the radioactive iodine, like there's no more space for it. But after the fallout from Chernobyl, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people like lost their thyroid after that nuclear fallout, because that's the first place it's absorbed. So if you don't get the like firefighters dose, the like extreme dose that kills you mm-hmm. in a few days, they still absorbed enough where it's like people had like cancer over the years and like birth defects and all this mm-hmm. horrible stuff. So the thyroid was like the first place that absorbs that. And then it just went through the body and caused a whole bunch of chaos. So scary, scary stuff. So watching this episode where Garvin is just picking up this metal and then later like Gia's wearing it around her neck, I was like, oh my God, oh God, put that down, please. Like, mm-hmm. it's so terrifying. That's like one of the things that truly, truly terrifies me in this world.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of things that harm humans are discovered this way, right? Germ mm-hmm. theory and a lot of things. It's like something happens. And as mm-hmm. we see in this episode, someone else uses the scientific method to get to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. But it's like something happens and it keeps happening and it keeps happening. Like I'm thinking of one of the most common types of contaminants in developing nations is usually when the water is contaminated with feces, because yeah. there's always some kind of gross germ there, whether it's worms or whatever, there's always some kind yeah. of gross germ. But it takes someone being like, I don't know, everyone's drinking from this pond and everyone's getting sick, but the people who drink from this other pond aren't getting sick. Mm-hmm. And then doing a little bit of investigation and being like, oh, if we boil the water, then we don't get sick. But you can't get to that conclusion and solution until the people get sick from drinking at pond A yeah. and not from pond B. And that's exactly what this episode is. It's like no one has any reason to think anything yeah. is off. And you had to trace the steps all the way back to figure out what was going on. And even then, all they knew was that these metals were making everyone sick, but they didn't know exactly how sick, right? They still, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, didn't know the level of damage that was happening in everyone. So, which maybe is for the best, but they knew enough to be terrified. So
yeah, it's really scary stuff though, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to see the whole scientific method in this episode, which was really, really cool.
Really neat.
Yeah. But backing up to where we are in time in the episode, at this point, he was touching the metal with his bare hands. No one knows what it is. And that kind of ends there. Then we go back to the ship where we go into Riker's quarters and he's playing the trombone, which we actually haven't seen him do in a couple seasons, I think.
We have. Remember, he was trying to play Nightbird. But then this is the Second Chances episode where Thomas Riker ended up being discovered down on that station. And mm-hmm. he gave the trombone to Tom Riker.
Right, right.
So he had to have like replicated a new one. But this actually does mark the last appearance of Riker's trombone playing in TNG. which I know we're like halfway through season seven, so we're going to see a lot of last times for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But this is the last time. He was playing this really catchy little tune. I searched everywhere. I tried to Shazam it. Could not find the song at all. And I was like, man, that sounds like such a catchy little tune. And I love like golden age jazz. So I was like, oh, I would have really have loved to
So if you know the name of this song, send us an email to info@thetngpodcast.com. Because I have a feeling somebody knows what it is.
It's I know, not us, and it's not the internet, but
somebody knows.
Somebody.
So Trey walks in on him playing, and it was super catchy. And he kind of was like, they're talking back and forth. And as she's asking him questions or making comments, he's responding by playing notes on the trombone. It's super cute.
But then so playful.
He ends up putting it down, and they have like a real talk. And basically she says, you know what? I want to take the bridge officer's test, and I want to become a commander. And Riker's like, what brought this on? And she's like, oh, a lot of things, a little of this, a little of that, high school reunion, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, aha. So you met some people at your reunion, at your class reunion, who've already taken the test. And so now you're feeling some kind of way about that. And she's like, okay, well, maybe that was a catalyst, but I really have been thinking about it. And she talks about that episode back when they hit the quantum filament and she was in charge on the
bridge.
And Captain Picard was like in a turbo lift with some kids. So she was in charge and she was really like, it was her. I remember it was her. It was Ro Laren and one other person. Mm-hmm. And Ro kept being like, what the heck? We can't, we shouldn't have to listen to her, you know? And she was like, I'm in charge. Listen to me. And she actually got to be in charge and did a great job. She did a great, despite the terrible situation. So she was like, it was ever since then that I've been thinking, you know, and she says about 2 years ago, I've been thinking like, I kind of miss that. Like, I kind of do want to experience command. I don't miss the horrible disaster, but I miss kind of the, you know, the feeling of being in charge and running the whole ship. It was kind of exciting. So
that Riker's was a good stretch for her.
Yeah. So Riker's like, and she says the same thing Beverly said, I want to stretch myself. And so Riker's like, I totally encourage you, like, go for it. Just so you know, I'm the one who administers that test. And I'm like very difficult. Like I make sure that it's difficult. It's very important that it, you know, if you're going to be serving on the bridge, you know what the heck you're doing.
Yeah, and she's like,
she's like, fine by me. I'm like, I'm an excellent student. So we're like, okay. He's like, starts tomorrow.
Okay, go get
it. So just like that, we're going to start doing the test tomorrow, which to me was like, wait, tomorrow? Can I?
I know. I was like,
read a bridge test for dummies first.
Yeah. Tomorrow morning. Like, huh?
Can I guess there's no preparation like to be done
next week. I don't know. Right. So yeah, he does say like, I'm going to leave you to it. He does in this scene call her Imzadi, which was not in the script, but Jonathan Frakes insisted that it be written in because I love that Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis have had a very close friendship for years since appearing on the show. And when Marina Sirtis's birthday rolls around every year, he will post on social media a tribute to like, happy birthday, my Imzadi. And I'm like, oh,
aww, that's so sweet.
I love that so much. I love it so freaking much. You know,
Will Wheaton does something similar for Gates McFadden. So he goes like, happy birthday, space mom.
Oh my God.
Thing.
I want to be in this family.
Granted, Wesley, you know, the actor who plays Wesley Crusher is what, like 45 or whatever. But the fact that he calls her space mom is just so cute. Like, it just
the cutest.
Transports me back to little Wesley. I just want to
like squeeze all of their little cheeks. Like, look how cute you are. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, okay. So down on the planet, this doctor whose name we don't find out for like a little while. It's like Talur or something.
It's Talur. Yeah.
Talur. Thank you. She's examining data and she's using what she says, scientific reality. Had my grandmother been examining you, or had you wandered in my grandmother's time, she would have thought of some like mystic, magical, whatever. She's like, no, we need scientific reality. He is an Iceman. He probably comes from the Valorian Mountains. His eyes and skin color are the result of prolonged exposure to harsh conditions. And I was like, you know what? Not a bad guess.
It's not.
What? You're in your 15th century, in the beginning of your Renaissance. What would you guess? Like, it's the same thing. And she prescribes a diet that I can get on board with. She's like, lots of butter, cheese, meats, lots of fatty. I was like, way ahead of you, honey. Way ahead of you. Let me get my
sugar. That apparently gets your strength up. Yeah, it I'm sure down does. For that too.
There's actually something to that, I think, where it's like when you're sick, you need to eat like higher fat, higher protein foods. But I was like, yeah, I'm on board. Let's slather some bread with some like Nutella. And like, I'll have some salami on the side or whatever. Like, I am aboard.
It was a great diet plan for the 15 whatevers. And then she's like, okay,
better than get like lots worm tea or some weird ass shit.
Yeah, I was waiting for her to bust out some leeches, but she did. She said, eat a delicious meal. So I'm like, okay,
done.
Kind of like this cooking. Doctor,
right?
Yeah. And so then she's like, get plenty of rest. and then I'll come by and see you tomorrow, which is pretty much, you know, that's standard doctor talk. Just get some rest. I'll see. It's like the turn it off, turn it on that IT guys do, but for humans. Get some rest and you'll probably be good.
I'll call you in the morning. Yeah. Now he can't remember anything, especially his name. So Gia, who's like taken a liking to him, is like, we'll call you Jaden. And Garvin, who's like the sweetest dad ever, was like, that sounds great, honey. We've just welcomed this mysterious stranger to our home around my young child.
All of the no's in no land is what I'm thinking in this entire scene. Poor man, poor memory loss, but I've got a little girl. It's different if, and I mean, granted, I'm a woman, so I still wouldn't let this random dude live in my house. But if I was a guy, right? If I was a guy, I'd be like, you know, like, or if she was, you know, if Data was a girl in this situation, I'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. But, as, you know, as long as, you know, the doctor checked him out, make sure he's not crazy, unstable, dangerous, whatever. But still, I don't know you. We're going to go ahead and put you up in the inn, you know, or we're going to go ahead and put you up in the hospital. If there's
some
a hospital.
Room in a manger or some shit, like
there's some place where you can go and recover quietly and I can check on you tomorrow. But if I've got a little like 8-year-old daughter,
no,
sir, you will not be sleeping in my home. In fact, even if I knew this man, like you, come on, there's just like,
no, there's a lot that can go wrong.
Again,
granted, urban, it's Data. So we know
it's Data. So we know that, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, you're letting this random dude sleep in your house. And you're just like, okay, honey, why don't you take him and tuck him into bed? Like, just like, it's just so crazy.
By the way, your face when you went, what? Like, it's just the funniest. It was like,
it's crazy.
Never in my universe is this happening. Okay.
No.
Like, yeah. I mean, thank God. Like, I never felt any sense of danger because we know Data is harmless.
Because we know Data. Yeah. This could be any, and this is literally a man off the side of the street
that
he found and
who has amnesia. Could have been a stone cold killer. We don't know. I will say this. I love the interactions between Data and Gia. It's very sweet.
They're very sweet.
Ronald
he's like a sweet uncle.
He is like a sweet uncle, like a very harmless, like Mr. Helpful, you know. But like Ronald D. Moore actually did write about this episode that it was kind of a little bit of a throwback to the Pen Pals episode where like Data and Sarjenka became friends.
But they never got to hang out.
Yes. And like in a non-pervy way, I'm just going to front load this. Mm-hmm. Data has kind of a close kin with like children because he's sort of a child. Mm-hmm. He is childlike, right? So they kind of wrote like Data has sort of this like close relationship with young girls because they're like vulnerable and sort of exploring the world around them. And Data
and young boys
too.
Because we have the episode Hero Worship where the little boy wants to be an android because his parents die and he like hangs out with Data.
Yeah.
So it's not just little girls. Even if Gia was a little boy, I would still be like, nope. You're not, there's no random man in any universe who's staying in my house with my little kid.
Nope. Like, not at all.
Just not happening.
Like laughable. Yeah.
Even if my kid was, I mean, I'm thinking of, okay, my youngest nephew is now 18 and he's like a big giant monster. He's like 6'4". He's like really strong and all that.
Monster. Dang.
Yeah. He's a monster. So maybe in that case, I'd be like, okay. Cause I'd be like, man, what are you going to do? You know, like, I feel like he's safe. But when he was like 9, 10, 11, No, not even close.
We'll be
at the inn, I'll check on you in the morning.
Yep. Good night.
Bye,
boo. Have the like short rib. It's really fatty and proteiny. Enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I'll pay for it. See you tomorrow. Now they still don't know anything about this radioactive material, so they take it to the village blacksmith, Skoran, to figure out what the metal is. And again, watching these people handle this radioactive material, which Skoran is like, oh, it's still warm. And Garvin's like, yeah, all the pieces. I'm like, don't touch that shit. Don't touch them. Oh my God. Like, I know they don't know what it is, but
Skoran goes and like bangs on it with the anvil or with a hammer or whatever to see like how malleable it is. Mm-hmm. I was waiting, Andrea, for him to take a bite out of it.
Oh,
I feel like
God.
That's what they did in the 1500s, right? Where they bit something and they're like, do you remember that the episode with Time's Arrow where they
coin.
Like, bit his like his little com badge and they were like, oh, it's gold or whatever. I was waiting for him to bite it.
First
I was like, oh my gosh, but they didn't bite
skill,
it.
What skill have we lost in our modern day age to detect gold
metal
just by biting? Yeah, it was like,
I also wonder.
Is this prospector shit right here? Like, did we just lose the skill as a culture?
Because I wonder, because you know, gold is very malleable. So I wonder if it is like soft and springy when you bite it, but because it looks pretty hard.
Gold is a very soft and malleable metal as far as metals go.
Right.
But like, you can't bite the difference between like some fucking lead and some. I love by the way that this
you tell that guy that.
Yeah.
You tell that guy that. I can't bite the difference.
I love how this episode gives us both so much anxiety for different reasons. I'm like, yeah, Data's staying at their house, whatever. And you're like, hell no. And I'm like, radioactive. Don't fucking touch that. Don't get near it. Bury that.
And I'm like, is
Jumanji.
He going to bite it?
Yeah. Okay. So Skaron does want to buy these pieces from Data, and Data agrees, but he wants to hold on to some of the pieces as they may provide like a clue as to his origins. So it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'll sell you most of them. They agree on a price, like 22 shekels or whatever the fuck. Right. And as they're talking, an anvil ends up slipping and landing on another blacksmith's leg who's like working in the back.
Yeah.
And he's screaming in pain, which obviously that anvil was like 10,000 fucking pounds.
Yeah.
And the men, two of these burly men, try to shift it and they cannot. Right. So Garvin is like, try to remain calm. We're going to get help. And as he's saying this to this poor blacksmith who's crushed his whole leg, Data picks this thing up easily. And everybody's like, what the hell?
Yes.
And I was like, everyone nice in the crowd. Time Zero, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone in the crowd, and you always love when Data has his super strength.
Everybody in the
crowd just is completely silent. They go from being mm-hmm. like, oh no, oh my goodness, oh no, which is all people can do in that scenario,
yeah,
to just being completely silent. And he's holding it and he's like, okay, I helped, right? And Garvin's like, put it down, Jaden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think he's going to hit somebody with it? I don't know. But he's like, okay, I'll put it down. So he puts it down and then he looks around and Data's like, uh-oh, because everyone is staring at him. And he goes, did I do something wrong? And Garvin's like, no, just unexpected.
You just scared the shit out of us. Now, here was actually a little perspective taking that I appreciated. These huge burly men are all looking at Data with fear. And at first I thought, why are they afraid? Like, he helped. But then I realized, oh yeah, this is exactly what it's like to go around as a woman alone at night. Everyone knows that Data now can overpower them easily. So
literally any or all of them.
Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want to hurt anybody. But if he got a wild harebrained idea to hurt somebody, there isn't a damn thing they could do about it. So even as someone as gentle as Data, the idea of being so physically overpowered by someone is always at the forefront of our attention. I don't know about you, like, but you know, you lived in New York City. So it's like, you must've been hyper aware walking around at night where it's like, oh my God. Right. And like, I live close to the beach and it's summertime as we're recording this. So I ride my skateboard in the middle of the night along the Strand. Cause I'm like, it's peaceful. It's quiet. Nobody's around to bother me. But if somebody like, I do have like, my attention is always going like 360 degrees. Cause just in case I'm 5'1" on a big day, like I'm going to be easily overpowered. So it's like, that's what I feel like. There was that whole shift in the community where they're like, oh fuck, this guy's got crazy strength, let's not piss him off, you know, which like, of course we know it's Data, so we're like, Data, can you force that door open for me, thanks buddy, like we don't worry about it, but they don't know that. So at dinner that night, I do love that Talur is like, well, there's an explanation for this, which I do love her for this. She's like, the people in the ice must have all kinds of crazy strength to fight off the ferocious beasts in the wild. And this is the beginning of the Data that we know, because he's like, well, if no one has ever seen these beasts, then how do you know that they exist? And she's like, well, they must. He's like, but how do you know? And she's like, well, I don't know, man, eat your short rib. Like, just, you know, I don't. Yeah.
The same reason I know that Icemen exist, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. It's like, you've never seen an Iceman before. You just made that up.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate that, because when everyone else was terrified, she was like, oh, no, there's an explanation. There's always an explanation. And that actually is very scientific. Now, I do not believe that everything in the world can be explained through science. But I do believe that a lot of things in the world can be explained through science. So something like love, for example, I don't think can be explained through science, even though actually, it can be explained through chemical connections and memories and formation of bonds and all of that. It can be dissected. It can be understood, but like better. But the act of falling in love or being in love or falling out of love, I don't think is scientific, in my opinion. But other things like physical things. You know, absolutely. We can like predict things. We can make things happen. We can do experiments that will create that same thing to happen over and over and over. So I appreciate that she's like trying to find a solution, because I feel like, and this is just speaking as a scientist, a lot of times that can save somebody a lot of stress, a lot of de-stress, right? So I'm thinking of back in the episode, The Devil's Due, when Ardra came and was like, I'm the devil and you owe me everything. And Picard was just like, no. And then she could do all these crazy things. And he was like, there's an explanation. And I was like, I mean, she's supernatural. It's the only explanation. Like, what does he think? But he was so like rooted in his science that he was like, no, there is an explanation. There has to be. And then he found one and he was right. And so it's like, you know, that, and I'm thinking of a time when my little cousin, She told me this story about her. They had a little like toy for their son, her and her, her boyfriend. They had a little toy for their son. And the toy started like talking on its own in the middle of the night. Like Chucky style. Right. And they, so they freaked out. They didn't know why it was doing exactly. So they freaked out. Like he grabbed it and ran outside and like threw it in the dumpster. And he was, and they were both just like, you know, trying to incense the house or whatever. Cause they're like, what the F was that? And as she's telling me this story, I was like, the batteries were running down. That's what happens to electronics when the battery, you just take the batteries out and put in new ones. And she was like, oh no, we just, it was possessed and we had to get rid of it. You know what I mean? It's like, me as a scientist, I'm like, oh, the doll is talking. The batteries must be running down. It wouldn't be like it's possessed. Right. I would think like there is an explanation. So it just, in those two scenarios, when my cousin, my poor cousin couldn't sleep because she thinks the doll's going to kill her in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I would have slept just fine.
Yeah. You're like, whatever.
Fresh batteries in the back. Yeah. You know, So I appreciate that she had this reaction because while everybody else in the village is like, Data's going to kill us all.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, well, it's just regular Iceman strength.
You guys must all have the strength. Now, as they're having this conversation, Garvin is starting to show some strong signs of exhaustion. And he's like, I think I'm just really tired. Maybe I need to get some fresh air, go for a walk, which I love the power of fresh air. There is no time period in our history where a little fresh air hurt anybody. You're having a headache, a rough time, a stressful day, you're crying. Get a little fresh air. It never hurts anyone unless there's like, you know, some chemical fucking fallout in Chernobyl. And then it's like, that's not fresh air. Don't breathe that.
Just because it's not fresh, right?
Yeah. But I will tell you, if I'm feeling stressed, I'm like, let me just go take Penny for a walk and like get a little fresh air. And I don't know what it is, but just that movement sort of like kind of resets your perspective or whatever. But I do love that even in this time period, they're like a little fresh air wouldn't go amiss. So he takes off and Gia lets us know that mother died about a year ago and Garvin has been trying to figure life out as like a single dad ever since. And I do love this moment where Gia's helping like collect the plates, you know, and Data hasn't really eaten much of this soup that looks not awesome, but like, he's like, well, it's not that I don't want it. It's just, I don't have an appetite at all. Cause you know, he doesn't need to eat. But they don't know that. So she's like, father said that mother went to a beautiful place where everything is peaceful and everyone loves each other and no one ever gets sick. Do you think there is such a place? And Data looks out the window to the night sky and sees the moon. And he says, yes. And I'm like, oh, he must like deep down remember some kind of core memory where it's like she thinks she's describing heaven and Data's like, you're describing the Enterprise or the world, the universe as it is right now, where it's like,
or the Federation or whatever.
Yeah, like it's peaceful. Everyone loves each other. No one gets sick. And I was like, oh, that was kind of sweet. Now on the Enterprise, Geordi and Worf are talking to Troy and Main Engineering and they're losing power. It's red alert. Shields are down, like the whole nine yards. And Troy says something like, switch to auxiliary control. And it's like nothing. And they're starting to lose containment and antimatter containment until like, you know, something's going on and Deanna's hesitating and nothing is working. And now, boom, the warp core explodes. And we realize pretty quickly, like it's all a simulation for the commander's test. And Riker is like, congratulations, you just killed everybody on board, which I was like, that's the last thing you needed to say to her right now.
Well, I mean, it's Riker. I don't fault him that at all. Like that's what he would have said to anyone in that moment. So they're in the holodeck. And Riker's just like, wow, that was terrible. And Troy's like, ugh, you know, like, I cannot get this. And so she says, okay, can you tell me what I did wrong? And Riker's like, no, I can't tell you that. And then she just like loses it. And she's like, well, how do you expect me to get better if you don't tell me what I did wrong? And then he loses it on her. Like, this is the test. And it's like, oop. And you see her just kind of like check herself like, oh, wait, right. That's right. Like, you are going to be tested. This is not your place to be coming in here, setting the rules and making demands. This is the test and it's on you to pass it. So you figure it out.
1,000,000%. And I will say she did. Riker does fill her, you know, he kind of fills us in where he's like, you've passed all of the other like diplomatic law. You've passed all the other tests, but the engineering qualifications are the hardest on the commander's test. And listen, I don't know about you, but I remember being in a university in the physics classes and the teacher would assign us these like homework problems, but they were on like an online program that we all hated down to its core because it was a program that just had like a little space for you to type in your answer. And even if you typed it incorrectly, it would say incorrect because like maybe you put a space after the two, but there needed to be like no space or something. Right. So it was one of those, but like you would type in an answer and it would say incorrect, but it wouldn't tell you anything about like, oh, you're close. Maybe try rechecking those calculations on whatever. So it would just say incorrect. And like each, I mean, it would take me four entire 12-hour days of studying to answer the 9 questions that she would assign. Wow. So it was like, it was so painful. And so I felt very much like Troy. It's like, well, how do I know what the fuck I got wrong if you don't tell me what I did? Like, how am I supposed to do better? So like, I can't tell you how many times I would cry over that stupid program. And then all of us in the class would like text each other. But of course, it's a computer program. So it would like change the numbers around. So you can't just like copy the answers.
Right.
But like, it would take 7 or 8 hours to get to one answer because like each question took like each part of the question took like 3 hours of figuring out to get to the next part. Right. So it's like, I just spent 4 days on this shit. How am I supposed to know what I did wrong if you won't tell me? So I totally felt her pain on that. I do not miss those days, but he does say like, this is the test. You're right. Like, I can't tell you. And you're right. He can't, because if she's going to be a bridge officer and the command is going to be on her shoulders, she better not have snuck past that test to get that qualification. I better not find out that my doctor just like paid someone to do a test for them. You know what I mean? Because it's like, no, you're not doing surgery on me. Absolutely not. Anyway, back on the planet, Talor is teaching the children that rock, fire, sky, and water are all the basic elements of living things. And I love Data's like kind of puzzled face. Like, this isn't. That's not right. Like,
I love it. He doesn't remember much, but he does remember this.
Yeah, he's like, that's not right.
She's teaching them all of this stuff that doesn't make any sense. But when she says it, you're like, okay, I can see where she got from A to B there. That tracks.
It's 15th century. Like, yeah, no shit.
It tracks. I mean, and the assumption she was making and the connection she was making were based on something. It wasn't just like, a tree is full of water because water brings life. I mean, she had like, see, there's smoke and smoke is like vapor and vapor, like she had connections, you know? And so
it was actually a good lesson. I was like, okay, I buy this.
Yeah. So Data chimes in and is like, I don't think that's correct. I think that you're just making a bunch of correlations, but this doesn't make any sense. And then he like corrects her and she gets super pissed, understandably so, because correcting a teacher in front of her class is not cool. Mm-mm. Not cool. I only had one student that ever did that. And it was so annoying because this student, not only was it annoying that he kept trying to correct me in front of the rest of the class, and this was one of my high school kids, but it was also annoying because he was always wrong. So I was just like, buddy, that is what you're saying is incorrect. What I'm saying is correct. And I know you think you're correct, you know, being all of 15.
You're confidently incorrect. Yeah.
However, you know, I have been doing this a while, you know, and I had to actually pull him to the side and have a chat with him and be like, look, I love your enthusiasm. This is the school we're at, right? I love your enthusiasm. I love that you're participating. I love that you're critically thinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not appropriate for you to keep saying like, you know, better than what I'm saying, especially when that information is incorrect, because now everyone's confused about what the correct answer is.
Yes. Which like, and I know you really well. So I know that like, if the student was correct, you wouldn't be pissed because it's not an ego thing for you.
No. If the student was correct, I'd be like, oh snap, I was wrong about that. Thanks.
Yeah. Oops. Thank you. Yeah. I had a student like that too. Let me tell you, this was a kid who swore up and down that he could survive inside a black hole. He's like, but I bet I could. I was like, no, sorry, none of us could. The entire planet wouldn't. The planet as a whole would be crushed down to the size of like one fucking atom. So I don't know what makes you think you can. He was like, nah, I bet I could. I was like, okay, moving on. Like, I'm just not even going to engage with this shit right here.
But we had a black hole to test it.
I was like, go, I'll watch you from here. Let me know how it turns out. Like, no? Right. Anyway, so... stone cold girl. Now, I did think it was funny that like what Data was saying was correct, or he was like, you know, because Talor was like, you know, rock is one of the elements. Look at this piece of wood. It's got fire inside of it because if we expose it to flame, the flame comes out. Not that it catches on fire because it's combustible, but the flame comes out. So fire must be part of it. And it smokes when you blow out the fire, which is part of sky, right? And rock is evident because it's hard and heavy. Mm-hmm. And water, that's a little bit harder. So some of these elements are like way deep down in there, a little bit harder to detect. But believe me, they're in there. And Data's like, you're making the correlation that this wood is combustible. That makes it have fire inside of it, which doesn't add up. So I think it's funny that Talor's like, friends, Jaden has lost his memory, so I wouldn't put too much faith in what he's saying. Which, like, given from Talor's perspective, it's like, yeah. Why would you know any better than I do? Mm-hmm. Now, while they're having this conversation, Data hears an argument and goes to investigate. Garvin and Skaran are arguing over the price of the radioactive metal, and Skaran is being an asshole and trying to cheat his way out of paying the agreed upon price.
Mm-hmm,
and sure Data's is. Like, I remember you saying 22 instead of 15. And he's like, well, what would you know? Your memory is shitty. And Data tries to back Garvin up, but I love that Skaran is like, stay out of this, Iceman. Your memory's not so reliable. It's like, oh, dang. Yeah,
this guy is such a jerk, but he's like dick. A well done. He's a well done kind of a lump of a man.
Yeah, he's a ruffian, I would say.
Yeah, they give him because he has that like, you know, he stirs up stuff in that antagonistic mm-hmm. side. Mm-hmm. But he also has very like simple desires. Like he's a blacksmith. Of course, he's going to cheat him out of his thing so he can make more money. So yeah. It's like a very simple character they wrote. But he does exactly what this character needs to do in mm-hmm. this storyline. So in this moment, totally. This is where we start to see like he's maybe not the most honest person in the world. Mm-hmm. And during this argument, Garvin nearly falls over.
Yeah.
And Data's like, oh, my gosh, you know, let's get him home. Like he's sweaty. He's feverish. They take him home and Talur is trying to figure out what's wrong with him. She touches his head and pulls out a chunk of his hair.
I know, like a whole clump. And he's feverish. He's got lesions that look like burn marks. Like, what is going on? And in my mind, I was hearing... So Data, did you notice Data is really taken by like Talur's magnifying glass? And he's like, wow, this is really cool. And he suggests a modification to increase its efficiency. But she's like, give me that. Like, you already interrupted my class.
Seriously.
You're already over here like
she's over here trying to save the day. And he's over here trying to be a know-it-all. So she's yeah. like getting irritated like, with
get
him.
Get out of here. Give me that.
Exactly. She's like, look, just open, keep the windows open. Make sure there's some fresh breeze coming in.
Fresh air.
I think he'll be good. And again, I was waiting for the leeches. I am so glad they did not bring leeches into this storyline. Just like so, because
there is
I
no think, place for leeches in medicine.
I think they would you. Have. This would have been the moment to be like, okay, yep. well, we got to bleed him. You know, and I'm just very glad they did not go in that direction because no. I mean, we already have radioactivity. So it's already awful.
We don't need like, bloodborne pathogens on top of this shit, girl. We really don't. Now, though, so, Data, though, is like, I'm going to do my own inquiry into Garvin's illness. So G is like, well, what do you need? So he's like, I need you to come with me because you know the town so I can gather the necessary materials to make whatever stuff lab. I need to make. Yeah, a lab, mm-hmm. which I'm like, yay, Data makes a lab. Like, this is such a fun part of the episode. Now, in the town, others are starting to get ill and they think it's because of Data. And they're like, none of us were sick until you showed up, which like. This tracks.
It's true.
Like, mm-hmm. it's very, you know what? If I didn't know any better, or if I were in this time period, even if like somebody showed up and all of us started getting mm-hmm. sick in the neighborhood, we'd be like, what the fuck is going on? Right. So it makes
sense. Oh, yeah. I would say the same thing in this time period. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes perfect sense from their perspective. And that's where their civilization is at this time. They're not in the scientific time period quite yet. So it's like it tracks. And
Data's
even like,
in the scientific period, like you said, like Data asked, is Garvin's illness spreading? And they're like, yes. And you see all these people in the town are starting to look sick. They're starting to have these yeah. patches on their skin. So yeah, even if it was this day and age, one person comes into the community and everyone gets sick
yeah,
of any like, kind of sickness. You'd be like, okay,
we need to
great.
Quarantine you for some mm-hmm. reason. Yeah. And this is like, also like we're kind of on the out edge of like COVID. It's 2023 when we're recording. Like, but still like imagine, you know, at the beginning of COVID, somebody comes into the grocery store, a bunch of people get sick. We're like, you're the cause. Right. Mm-hmm. There's something here. Mm-hmm. Now, Data's like, gee, I think we should leave. So later on, you know, Talur walks in on Jaden / Data analyzing the skin sample from G and Garvin. And he's taken that magnifying glass and leveled it up to like the nth power. So the objects appear about 500 times their normal size. And I was like, hell yeah, Data, bring on that scientific renaissance, baby. He starts talking about interstitial fluids and membrane integrity. And I love that the writers were so thorough about this. They obviously had somebody with some bio background or medical background or something mm-hmm. to give them these words. I was like, yes, yes.
And Talur is kind of impressed and kind of put off at the same time. She's yeah. like, she's got this duality because she's like, what is this? And he's like, oh, I improved on your design. And she's like, may I? And she looks through and she's mm-hmm. like, this is amazing. You know, she's kind of like, this is, she's odd, but at the same time, she's still irritated by this like guy who's showing her up so handily and so yeah. easily.
She's like, and, but like, I was the go-to. I was yeah, Dr. Quinn medicine woman before you showed up.
She's been Dr. Quinn all this time.
Yeah.
And now like this guy's kind of just coming out of nowhere and supposedly knows more. But now it's like, mm-hmm. okay, now he's not just talking about fire and rocks and wood, but like, this is legitimately better than anything I've ever even thought of. Right. So totally, she's just kind of standing right there, and Data's explaining all of his experiments, what he's done and what he's tested and what he's going to test next. And he's like, we need to find the cause of what is different. What has everyone interacted with? And she says, well, they've had lots of different experiences together. They've grown up in this, they've been in this village together for all their lives. And he's like, yeah, but the sickness is recent. So I think it's a recent exposure, something they have all been exposed to. And then she goes, well, the only thing they've all been exposed to is you, Jaden. You must be the cause. Which, yeah, I mean, that does make sense.
They're not, and he wrong.
Goes, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I thought that too. He was like, that was my first guess. He says, but you, for example, have been in close contact with me just as much as them, and you're not sick at all.
Thank you.
So that makes me think that maybe it's not me. And she was like, well, I didn't think of that. You know, she's just kind of like, oh, well,
she's like begrudgingly happy he's there to help, but also like, but I was the Beyonce and you were backup booty, and now you're the Beyonce and I don't want to be backup booty. Okay.
Like, exactly. I couldn't have put it better than that. So in that moment, Gia comes in and she's like, father won't eat and da da da. And Data's like, don't worry, I'll feed him. You should be resting. And then he looks and sees this little necklace mm-hmm. she has on. And he's like, where did you get that pendant? And she's like, oh, dad bought it from Skaran 2 days ago. And he he's like, may I? And he takes the pendant. He's like, this is made of that same metal that I originally came to this village with.
Man,
so maybe this metal has something to do with it.
Gia saves the day here. I feel like Data would have gotten to that conclusion, but after like eventually a handful of deaths, right?
Oh, for
like
sure.
Garvin mm-hmm. would have been long gone. Thank mm-hmm. God for Gia just wandering in to be helpful, because she was the catalyst for Data to be like, wait a second, this metal is, something's weird about it. So he, you know, he's like, can I have this for a little bit? I kind of want to do some tests on it, right? Now, so he goes off to do those tests. And on the Enterprise, Troy is going through every damn system and subsystem on the Enterprise to figure mm-hmm. out how to pass this engineering exam. Riker comes to her quarters to tell her he's going to cancel the test. And she's like, what? Like, she kind of loses it. She slams mm-hmm. the table. She's taken it 3 times and is no closer to passing it, you know, Riker says. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, look, it's nothing personal.
I'll take it 5 times. I'll take it 7 times. I'm going to take it until I pass it. And Riker's just like, I'm in charge of the safety of this ship.
Yeah.
If you can't cut it, you will not be
in Umbridge crew. You're not doing that.
Period. And he says it really sweetly too. He's like, no, despite how much I care about you, I cannot endanger this ship because of you.
Thank you.
You're like, oof.
Yep. He says, you can spend the next month memorizing the technical schematics of the ship, but I don't think you'll be any closer to passing the test. And Deanna asks the question that I thought, tell me one thing. Is this a test of my ability to handle a no-win situation? Am I supposed to like Kobayashi Maru this shit?
Yeah.
Or is there actually a solution? And he says, there is a solution. As much as I care about you, my first duty is to the ship. I cannot let any bridge officer serve who is not qualified. I'm sorry. And he walks out and she slams her hands on the table, which is a really cool, like plexiglass, see-through schematic.
I love seeing an angry Troy. Give me angry Troy over teary Troy any day, because it just shows, I don't know, something about it, because she's so calm and collected, I think that when she gets angry and yells or slams something, it's like, oh, she has other emotions. She's not just this sweet, like flowery, lovely, you know, person, but she also can experience anger, irritation.
It's like realizing, it's like realizing your therapist also gets really pissed about stuff. And you're like, therapy is not like, it's not a state of mind that you're in all the time. You know what I mean? So it's like, she gets pissed.
It's not a state of mind.
You know what I mean? Where it's not, it's just true. Like, let me just kind of analyze
where
this comes
from.
It's like,
all the time.
Yeah. It's like, no, yoga teachers get mad too. And I was a yoga teacher for years and I definitely got mad about shit and I would be very zen about stuff. But also it's like, anybody who's heard this podcast for more than 5 minutes knows I can get upset about shit. So she kind of has this moment where she's like breathing heavily after Riker leaves and she's already slammed her hands on the table and she's like, wait, my first duty is to the ship, to the ship. So she has this epiphany and heads to the holodeck immediately. She's back in the program. It's another hopeless case. She has to do this difficult thing and send Geordi to the conduit to repair this like ODN junction that's causing this warp breach or something. And she's like, Geordi, can you go in there and fix it? And Worf is like, sir, which still cracks me up that they call women sir in Starfleet.
On TV,
they don't do that in the actual military, but they do it in Starfleet. And Worf is like, sir, that's in a plasma field. He'd never survive the radiation. And I was like, hey, I love that we're like on theme with radiation this week. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I know that. Jordy, can you do it? And he's like, yeah, I think so. And she's like, then do it. And he goes towards this little doorway and kind of like looks back. And she has like buried her face in this panel to like avoid cracking, you know, but she takes a second and looks at him and he goes off. And I was like, Jesus, like, yeah, you know, and Riker comes in. He's
it's
like,
it's a horrible situation. Yeah.
Yeah. And he and Riker's like, end simulation. So it doesn't, they don't end up in the black and yellow holodeck. They're still in main engineering, but like all the people have disappeared. Mm-hmm. And he's like, something told me you wouldn't let this go. Congratulations, you passed. And she's like, this was testing to see if I could send someone to their death. And he's like, yeah, because you will have to do that if you're in command long enough. Mm-hmm. It's a very real possibility.
Which they've all done. They've all either had to send people to their death or leave people to die or, you know, variations or kill people, right? They have to fire on ships that blow up in space and they killed every single person on that ship.
Yep, they sure did. They sure did. So he's like, let's get out of here, Commander. And I was like, wow, it's just that fast. You don't have to like submit the paperwork and the whatever.
There's
like,
no ceremony. Did you bring the pip with you? Yeah. Did you carry these in your pocket?
Non-existent pocket that you don't even have in your uniforms at all. It's just, did you just have an extra pip on your collar? We just didn't notice. Like you've been walking.
We're just
like
gonna replicate one on our way out. We'll just be like computer, replicate a pip. Boom.
Call it a day. Mm-hmm. We'll take that one from Sam from like last week. Now on the surface, Data shows T'Lour his findings so far. He's got this really cool cloth. This is all scientific method that like I love so much. He's got a cloth that like he's dipped in something I didn't quite catch that like becomes luminescent when exposed to light. So he takes like a little lantern and puts it up there and then the cloth kind of glows a little bit. Then he places the pendant in front of the cloth and this cool kind of green like sparkly pattern appears on the cloth. And I was like, what a neat visual representation of
radioactivity,
photons. Yeah, I was like, ooh, that's cool. And T'Lour's like, where did that come from? Like, what is this? You know, and he shows her how that pattern disappears when he puts the radioactive case between the pendant and the cloth. Yeah. And it either like absorbs or blocks the particles. And T'Lour is like, mind blown.
Yeah. It's the case so that says radioactive. The case is not radioactive, but the metal is. And so he, when he blocks it, he goes, well, I think this case was designed to protect us from these particles from this metal. And so they're like kind of looking at each other like, wow. So he's like, okay, I need your help. I need you to go through the entire city, collect every single scrap of this metal and put it in this case.
Yeah.
And I have a few more tests to run. So she's like, fine, I'll do it, but I'm not going to like it.
I was Beyonce, like as she walks out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. She does it, but she does it grudgingly, but she does do it, which is important because this is what's going to at least keep the exposure from spreading to person to person to person to person.
Yeah.
So as she leaves, Scorn walks in with somebody else and he's like, hey, Jaden, I got a bone to pick with you. You're the reason we're all sick and I'm going to put it into it. So I guess if he beats the crap out of him, that's going to make him not sick? Question mark. Sounds, not sure.
Sounds just like something Scorn would say or do.
Yeah, not sure the logic.
Like you
here.
Didn't think this through, but you just want to react with violence. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So he chose violence and he goes, really he swings at Data and Data just pushes them to the side. Like there's no damage done. But the other guy happens to be carrying a freaking pickaxe in his hand.
Yep, sure
because
does.
Because they remembered how strong Data is. And he takes a swipe at his face. I mean, he was trying to murder him, which is so brutal. Like, who hits somebody in the head with a pickaxe? This is
Dude,
crazy.
What the hell? Yeah.
Right? Like, you could have hit him with, like, the blunted end of the pickaxe. You know, like, hit
sounds
him in his
like,
stomach, knocked him
like
over.
Kind of like, sounds like the kind of story you'd read about, like, some Hollywood superstar was, like, murdered in some brutal way. And it was, like, some pickaxe shit that you're like, what the hell? Like, you know, there's always some stories like that of, like, old Hollywood murders. And you're like, Jesus Christ. Like, who attacks somebody with a freaking tire iron?
Who attacks someone with a pickaxe or a tire? Yeah. Exactly. Unless you're, like, in the mountains breaking rocks when the fight happens.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason.
A pickaxe?
No reason.
So he swings
at
Data.
So lucky he didn't actually hit Data because that would have put the end of and everybody would have died from this radioactive poisoning.
Yep. But they would have been secure knowing that they killed the guy who they think was responsible. So he swipes at him and Data just barely misses the blow, but it does catch his face and scrapes off half of his face and it exposes all of the cool like LEDs and wiring and circuitry. And when the two guys see that, they lose their crap and they run out as fast as they can. And they're like, you're a monster. You're a monster.
They're like, what are you? And Data goes, I do not know. And then they run off. I was like, oh my God. Now you've created like an even bigger villain to take down.
Yeah. And really, like, if you thought he was such a monster, why wouldn't you just keep hitting him with the pickaxe? I don't know, whatever. So they run away.
Right?
Like, if he really is such a bad guy, but they run away to, like, recoup or something. And now he's just freaking out because, as far as he knows, he was an Iceman from the mountains. And now all of a sudden his face like is on the circuitry.
Thing. Yeah, it's like, mm-hmm. I'm not even, like, human or whatever.
Or you know. Whatever, because yeah. This society doesn't even have circuitry stuff. They barely have, like, electricity.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's, yeah, the Barconians, it, yeah. It's like, I thought I was Barconian, but yeah. I'm obviously not. Yeah. So, you know, Skron and Tulur end up gathering at Garvin's house and start a mob to go hunting for Data. And Garvin
like a Frankensteinian mob. Like yes, they've all got like pickaxes now.
Yeah. Like, like torches and pitchforks and shit. And Garvin is super sick. His hair is falling out, but he's like, he insists that Data wouldn't hurt them. But obviously they don't want to listen because they're all like, you know, they've already drinking their mob juice. So they're all fucking angry and shit. And as they leave, Data sort of pops in quietly through like a little alcove in the back and his head is shrouded in a hood. And G is like, I want to see your face. And he's like, I don't want to scare you because, you know, he's dated. He's considerate. And she's like, well, I still want to see. So he removes the hood and she is shocked by the circuits. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, it was probably really well done for like 1994. Not super cool looking in like super HD now, because you can clearly see they just like kind of glued a flat panel of circuits to his face and then just sort of did some skin texture around. So it looks like his face was giving me a little bit of like Too Short a Season vibe where I was like, now your head is like a little bit too big because you've added these like extra pieces. Right. But like, okay, the mob is searching for Data now, she says. So he's like, oh God, I gotta hurry. So some short time later, Data's come up with a treatment that seems to be working. So he's worked on some of the skin samples and he's given this medicine to Garvin, who seems to be improving. So he gives the medicine to Gia, who's falling very, very ill. And he's like, I need to give this to everyone, but nobody would trust me because they think I'm the source of the illness. And so why would they trust him? And they kind of put together, you know, Data sort of asks her like, where is the water source? Is the well in town the only water source? And Gia is so weak and sick, and she manages to kind of cough out. The nearest river is 2 days away. So he's like, okay, I've got to put the medicine in the water, which he tries to do, you know, like sneaking around the town square. But just as he approaches the well, the mob has like miraculously found him right there.
Mm-hmm. Where were they on his whole trip to the well? This mob is so disorganized. Like, Skran, I know this is not your first mob. So they need some retraining because the town square, it looks like it's an ambush, but why would it be an ambush? I don't know. I mean, he is super strong, so maybe it was an ambush, but why would they know he was going to be there? It just doesn't make any sense.
You just assume, you're like, Skran, this is not your first mob. Okay.
We can tell that this is not Skran's first mob or second mob or third mob. So as Data's trying to like,
he's trying to tell people to go back where they came from and shit. Like, it was just so like with today's times. I was like, oh God.
He's the guy who never freaking changes. The times change, but this dude doesn't. Ever. So he's trying to pour this medicine. He's got like a bucket of the medicine and he's trying to pour it into the well. And the whole mob is like screaming and yelling. And so before they can attack, he dumps the bucket into the well and pours in all the medicine. And as the medicine's draining, Skran runs up with the freaking like metal pole.
Like a rod or something. Yeah. Like a pole vault pole with like a sharp like a
pole
tip. Vault
pole. Yeah. Where he got this, we don't know. A giant tent peg. And he sticks it into Data's heart. And they both get electrified. And Data falls over like dead. And Skran seems completely unfazed. I thought he would also be dead. And at least
I think he got like electrocuted and
he
like,
did get shocked,
down.
But yeah. No, he got knocked back into the crowd, but he was still fine because he was still standing on his feet. He was still looking around shocked. He was staring down at Data. And I was like, you just got electrocuted. Shouldn't he like also be on the ground or something? I felt like that would be poetic justice for it to be like, yeah, your violence killed you, but it didn't. It didn't hurt him at all. Mm-mm. So Data falls down. And the medicine has been delivered and the whole crowd is looking in shock. And Talor runs over and, you know, starts to like look for vital signs or whatever and looks up. And she actually has tears in her eyes looking at Skran and kind of is like, what did you do? Is what she's saying silently, but no one says anything. And everyone's just kind of like, oh, right. And you're like, oh my gosh. So then fast forward to sometime later, the whole village is fine. Everyone, the town square is full of people, full of kids.
Yeah,
people are laughing and playing. Everyone's fine. No one has lesions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got plenty of energy. So all is well. And we know that the medicine worked. Mm-hmm. And we see Gia walking super slow and she seems super sad. And you're just like, aw. And she's kind of like taking her time through the town square where everyone else is having a good time. Yeah. And then Beverly walks up to her looking exactly like Barconian. She's got the cool lightning tattoos mm-hmm. on her forehead and a really cool hairstyle and a great outfit and stuff. And she starts asking this girl of all girls if she's seen their friend. And then Riker comes over and they start describing Data. And she's like, yeah, we didn't know his name. We called him Jaden, da da da. And she's like, well, you know, where is he? Can you lead us to him? And she points at a gravestone, a grave mm-hmm. marker, and is like,
that she had stopped at. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where she was going. She was going to like pay tribute at his grave. You're like, oh my gosh. You know? And so mm-hmm. she kind of tells him the whole story in about two sentences, everything that Data did while he was there. And Beverly's like, what happened to the metal fragments? And she's like, we buried them in the forest. And I mean, she's just so forthcoming with everything they need to know.
This girl needs to learn how to be a little bit more mistrusting if she's going to survive on this planet. But
I mean, okay. According to her father and, you know, inviting random strange men into the house, I guess you can trust absolutely anyone and anything in this yep. society here. So, and luckily it's Beverly and Riker, so she can. Yeah.
And luckily it was Data. So like no harm ever came to them.
Yeah. No harm ever came to them or was ever going to come to them intentionally.
If the big bad wolf ever came to their town, they'd be the first to get
eaten. He would eat them all.
Immediately. Yeah. Yeah.
So she goes, what was his real name? And Riker's like, Data. And she's like, well, he was my friend too. And walks away. And I was like, oh, like so sad, because she really is grieving the loss of a friend that she won't ever see again, which is super sad.
Yeah. But then
Beverly goes, like, she kind of scans surreptitiously and she's like, yep, it's Data. All right. And she goes, all right, let's just beam Data and the probe fragments to the ship, which we could have done in the first place.
Again, mm-hmm. back to the top of the episode. Why couldn't you scan that shit? If a tricorder can tell you that the radioactive fragments are 4 kilometers outside of the town buried underground. A tricorder can tell you that? What do you think the ship's sensors can do that are like a billion times stronger than a tricorder? We could have done I mean, again, this is kind of one of those like how it should have ended skits. Yeah. Where it's like, mm-hmm. At the top of the episode, Deanna and Beverly are speaking and they're like, yeah, there's some radioactive fragments. We just beam them up and now we're on our way to meet with the Lexington to deliver these materials. Okay, bye. Like nothing's mm-hmm. ever happened. So Beverly does say as she scans, she's like, he's been deactivated, so I don't know how extensive the damage is. So they're like, we'll just beam him up. No one will ever know. The gravesite will remain undisturbed, like whatever. So on the Enterprise, Data is back up and running. And Picard is there with Troy and with Riker and Beverly. And Picard says, what's the last thing you remember? And Data only remembers that there was a surge in the probe and it overloaded his positronic matrix. He doesn't remember anything beyond that except when just waking up right now in sickbay.
Which is really sad because he's lost all those memories that he's made, the people he's met, the things he's done.
I think he kept his memories of Sarjenka from Pen Pals, right? So I was like, man, mm-hmm. you had a series of friends. Like Garvin was a friend. Even Talor was kind of a friend. Mm-hmm. Gia was like,
he was a colleague, at least.
Your best friend, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, and you've made such an impact. And this is what Riker says. It's like, apparently you saved a whole town from like radioactive poisoning and you made some very special friends, especially like one from a little girl. And Data's like, oh, you know, and then Counselor Troy goes, well, all's well that ends well. If you excuse me, I have the bridge this watch. And she's just like so proud of herself. Mm-hmm. And Data goes, Counselor, have you been promoted in my absence? She's like, yes. So going forward, you can call me sir, because he's a lieutenant commander and she's a commander. And he goes, yes, sir. And like off she goes. And I was like, aw.
That was really cute. And it makes Data go like, how long have I been on this ship? Right.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly I really do wish what happened.
Yeah. I do wish he would have been able to keep his memories. Cause like, I think he would have treasured that as well.
I think so too.
Yeah. But did you realize this is the only, Picard only has one line in this whole episode. He's right there. The reason is because this was a result of Sir Patrick Stewart having taken time off to appear in his one-man version of A Christmas Carol in London while the episode was filmed. So this actually marks the briefest appearance by a season lead in Star Trek so far. I was like, that's kind of cool.
You know, that's amazing. I didn't even realize that Picard wasn't in this episode until this scene. When I saw him, I was like, wait, is this the first time seeing Picard this whole episode?
It's like, have you not?
They could have just not had him, honestly, and I wouldn't have noticed mm-hmm. because the story was so complete. I wouldn't have been like, but where's, and I know, you know, Worf had a cameo, Geordi had a cameo, and it perfectly fit with the test. Like it made sense.
Because when the story kicks off, Beverly had command of the ship because she was doing the night watch. Mm-hmm. So like all the regulars on day watch wouldn't have been there anyway. So yeah, if Troy and Riker were in there because they were part of the B plot, Worf and Geordi just had a few cameos. You're right. It was like,
but the cameos like they had like totally scenes. Fit. Made like sense. It totally made sense. Yep. And I mean, it just was like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if Picard hadn't been in this episode at all, I would have been like, I wouldn't have even noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the story just felt really well done. Like if it had just been Riker, Beverly, and Troy, it'd be like, okay, like Beverly and Riker are there because they were the ones who beamed him up.
Yeah.
And then maybe Troy is there in her counselor capacity mm-hmm. to be like, how are you feeling, Data? What do you remember? How are you doing? And then she like excuses herself. That would have been totally fine. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been like, I wonder if there was something in Patrick Stewart's like contract that's like, I have to appear in every episode or something.
I don't know about those things, but I feel like there's got to be something in all of their contracts where they need to be in every episode.
At or least, a certain like, number of them. Or
yeah, unless they like, really can't. I mean, there was one when Troy wasn't there a few times, but that's because she was like in the hospital. But I think that's more like I physically can't be on camera versus my contract says I have this many hours where, you know what I mean?
There were a few episodes when they were still I think the writers were still trying to figure out if they needed to write her off or what. Cause like Tasha was still there. Beverly was still there. And Deanna was there. And they were like, three women on a show. That's too many because it's the fucking 80s. But there were a few episodes where in the captain's log at the top of the episode, it was like Counselor Troy is away on a diplomatic mission to Beta Zed or to visit her mother or to whatever the fuck. Right. And she just wasn't on the episode at all. So Picard having this one line, kind of a throwaway, him saying, what was the last thing you remember? He had only one line in the whole episode. But anyway, that's where the episode ends. What are your final thoughts on this one, Charisse?
You know, I didn't love this one. This is not going to go on my rewatch list. I don't think it was bad, but I also just don't think it was super memorable. Like the radioactive particles and the medieval science was amazing. It was so cool. Like I loved that. But probably 3 months from now, I'm going to be like, what was that episode again? Mm-hmm. Like when I see the thumbnail. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts. What about you?
I actually really enjoyed this episode. When I first saw the thumbnail, I was like, Renaissance, village, amnesia. Like, I feel like we've done this a bunch of times already. But I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed the episode as a whole. I thought it was very complete, like you said. Mm-hmm. I thought the pacing was really well done. Mm-hmm. I love that the Prime Directive was totally violated, even though, like, they didn't introduce, like, warp technology or anything. But they did, you know, Data single-handedly, like, moved the society up, like, 300 years in, like, medical technology and equipment or whatever. So I thought that was really neat. And I did really enjoy his friendship with Gia. And it's about time we see Troy start taking up some leading command, because the actress who plays Troy, Marina Sirtis, said several times, as soon as Captain Jellico made her wear a regulation uniform, she put her boobs away and suddenly got a brain as a character. And, you know, I love Marina Sirtis for saying things like that, because she was like, man, I was so objectified. It was really quite disgusting. Mm-hmm. I had costume designers and, you know, people who worked in costuming department literally put their hands down my blouse and like grope my boobs to like lift my boobs up in the costume so they looked more booby, I guess, or whatever. And she was like, I was just like felt up and groped and assaulted a bunch of times. And once I started wearing a regulation uniform, that didn't really happen anymore. And my character got to be way more independent, intelligent, interesting, all of it. So I really love that this is sort of like that next step for her growth. Mm-hmm. I thought it was way earlier, but I really enjoyed this episode. So it was a fun one. It was a fun one. Next week, guys, we are breaking down season 7, episode 17, Masks. That's going to be a fun one. Thank you so much for nerding out with us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com. to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.